A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this one, and it's a good one, because there's a genuine public knowledge gap here. Most people hear Laura and think image generation, the style adapters, the character bags, the thing Stable Diffusion users download and stack like trading cards. But Laura actually originated in the language model world. The original 2021 paper by Edward Hu and colleagues at Microsoft demonstrated it on GPT-3. The diffusion model image Loras came later. They borrowed a technique invented to adapt transformers for text. So the association most people have is historically backwards. And the bigger point is, you can do exactly the same thing to a text-generating LLM. Most people don't know that.
That awareness gap matters, because it means people are missing one of the most practical, accessible techniques in the entire LLM ecosystem. We're talking about the ability to shape a model's behavior, its voice, its output format, its domain vocabulary, with a file that's maybe 50 megabytes, trained on a single consumer GPU, in an afternoon. And the model doesn't even know it's been changed until you load the adapter. It's remarkable.
Walk me through it. Low-rank adaptation. What does that actually mean?
Let's start with the paper. Edward Hu, Yilong Shin, Philip Wallace, Zeyuan Allen, Zhu, Yuanji Li, Shayan Wang, Liu Wang, and Weizhu Qin published in June 2021 titled LoRa, Low-Rank Adaptation of Large Language Models. They demonstrated it on GPT-3, which at the time had 175 billion parameters. The core idea is deceptively simple. When you fine-tune a model, you're updating its weight matrices, these enormous grids of numbers that determine how the model transforms input to output. A full fine-tune touches every single one of those numbers. Laura says, don't touch them. Freeze the entire base model. Instead, inject a tiny pair of matrices alongside the frozen weights and only train those.
A pair of matrices.
Here's the key insight. The updates you'd make during fine-tuning, the changes to those giant weight matrices, tend to live in a low-dimensional subspace. They're not using the full expressive capacity of the matrix. So instead of learning a full rank update, you can decompose it into two much smaller matrices. If your original weight matrix is, say, D by D D tie, thousands of numbers on each side, you can represent the update as A times B, where A is D by R, and B is R by D, and R is something tiny.
R is the rank in low rank.
And that's the whole trick. You're training two narrow matrices whose product approximates the full update. The number of trainable parameters collapses. For a typical 7 billion parameter model, a full fine-tune touches all 7 billion. A LoRa with rank 16 might train something like 20 to 40 million parameters, well under 1%. The adapter file ends up being tens of megabytes versus multiple gigabytes for a full fine-tune checkpoint.
This works because... why does a rank 8 update capture enough?
The intuition in the paper, which has held up remarkably well in practice, is that the pre-trained model already encodes a huge amount of general knowledge. When you adapt it to a new task or style, you're not rewriting its understanding of language. You're giving it a relatively low-dimensional nudge in a specific direction. The adaptation lives in a small subspace. So compressing that nudge into a low-rank decomposition doesn't lose much.
It's the difference between remodeling the entire house versus painting one room.
That's actually a pretty good frame. And because the base weights are frozen, you can share the same base model across dozens of different LoRas. One GPU serving one set of weights, and you just hot swap the adapter depending on what behavior you want. Legal contract mode, casual podcast mode, JSON output mode, same model underneath, different LoRa on top.
Casual podcast mode. I see what you did there.
I'm not being subtle.
You never are. So let's get into the mechanics. Where do these adapter matrices actually go?
They're injected into the attention layers, specifically into the query, key value, and output projection matrices. The original paper focused on the attention weights, but in practice, many implementations also target the feed-forward layers. You pick which modules to adapt, and that's a hyperparameter, the Hugging Face PEFT library. Parameter-efficient fine-tuning makes this modular. You specify target modules, rank, alpha, dropout, and it handles the injection. Alpha is a scaling factor. The lower update is scaled by alpha divided by R. So if you want a stronger adaptation, you can crank alpha. If you want it more subtle, you lower it. It's one of the levers you tune alongside the rank itself and the learning rate.
You train these small matrices. At inference, how does the adapter actually get used?
The simpler one is merging. You take the trained A and B matrices, multiply them together to get the full rank update, and add that update directly into the frozen base weights. Now you have a single set of weights, a standard model file that loads like any other. You've permanently baked the adaptation in. The advantage is zero inference overhead. The model runs at exactly the same speed as the base.
The other mode.
You keep the base weights untouched and load the LoRa adapter separately. At inference, the model computes the base transformation and then adds the LoRa contribution on the fly. W times X plus A times B times X. The overhead is tiny because the LoRa matrices are so small, but the real power is that you can swap adapters between requests. One API call gets the legal LoRa, the next gets the creative writing LoRa, the next gets the summarization LoRa. Same GPU, same base model. It's like having a single engine that can run on different fuel maps.
Hot swappable personalities. The modular synthesizer approach to language models.
That's why the image generation world grabbed this technique so aggressively. A stable diffusion checkpoint is several gigabytes. Downloading a full fine tune for every art style would be absurd. But a 50 megabyte LoRa that makes everything look like a Studio Ghibli background? That's a trivial download. Civitai has tens of thousands of them.
Which brings us back to the misconception. People think LoRa equals image style adapter because that's where they encountered it. But the image people got it from the language people.
The language people are still using it extensively. It's just less visible to the general public because text LoRAs don't produce visually obvious artifacts you can share on social media. You can't post a screenshot of your model now reliably outputting valid JSON.
Check out this API response format. Not exactly viral content.
But under the hood, it's everywhere. Open source model fine-tunes on Hugging Face are increasingly distributed as LoRa adapters rather than full model weights. The PEFT library has millions of monthly downloads. And the commercial inference providers. They're absolutely using LoRa-like techniques to serve multiple customer fine-tunes from shared base models.
Let's get practical. What are text LoRAs actually good for? When would I, as someone who uses LLMs, want one instead of just writing a better prompt?
Four main categories. First, consistent voice or style. Prompting can get you partway there, right in the style of a Victorian naturalist, but it's fragile. The model drifts. A LoRa trained on actual Victorian naturalist prose encodes that style into the weights. It's reliable across thousands of generations.
Prompting is like giving stage directions to an actor. A LoRa is like the actor having actually studied the character for 6 months.
Second category, domain vocabulary and factual patterns. If you need a model that reliably uses the correct terminology for, say, semiconductor manufacturing or maritime law, a LoRa trained on domain corpora will internalize that. Prompting can remind the model, but it won't be as consistent, and the prompt itself eats context window. Output format adherence. This is a big one. You can tell a base model always output valid JSON with these exact keys, and it'll try, but it'll drift. Especially over long generations or complex schemas. A LoRa trained on input-output pairs where the output is perfectly formatted, JSON will produce that format with near-perfect reliability. It's not reasoning about the format, it's learned it as a behavior.
Which matters for anything that feeds into a pipeline.
If your downstream parser breaks because the model added an extra comma or used single quotes instead of double, you've got a real problem. A LoRa can eliminate that class of failure almost entirely.
The fourth category.
Behaviors that base models resist or do poorly from prompting alone. Some models are heavily RLHF to be cheerful, hedged, and verbose. You can prompt against that. Be concise, don't hedge, don't use emoji, and it helps, but the training runs deep. A LoRa can override those tendencies more fundamentally because you're training on examples that embody the target behavior. The model learns that in this adapter's context, concision is the norm, not a deviation.
This is the baking personality into an LLM use case.
And it connects to something I've thought about a lot. The base models we get from labs have a particular voice. Anthropic's models tend toward thoughtfulness and hedging. OpenAI's toward helpfulness and structure. But those are design choices, not laws of nature. Allura lets you remix that.
The glockenspiel of corporate approachability. You can swap it for a different instrument.
I don't know what that means, but yes.
Those are the use cases. Let's talk trade-offs. When does Allura not beat prompt engineering?
When the behavior you want is simple, well understood by the base model, and doesn't need to persist across many generations. If you just need a one-off summary in a particular tone, a system prompt is faster, costs nothing to train, and you can iterate on it in seconds. LoRAs have a training cost, not huge, but real. You need a data set, you need to run training, you need to evaluate. That overhead only makes sense when the behavior is recurring.
The break-even point.
If you're doing this once, if you're doing it 100 times a day across different users or sessions, LoRA starts looking very attractive. Also, LoRAs are less interpretable than prompts. You can read a prompt and see what it's asking for. A LoRA is a matrix of numbers. You can't easily inspect what it's learned. That matters for debugging and for trust.
Versus full fine-tuning.
Full fine-tuning updates all parameters. In theory, that gives you more capacity. You can learn more complex adaptations. In practice, for most style and format tasks, LoRA matches or nearly matches full fine-tuned quality. The paper showed this on GPT-3. LoRA matched full fine-tuning on several benchmarks while training fewer than 1% of parameters. Full fine-tuning's main advantage is when you're teaching genuinely new knowledge, facts, not just behaviors. LoRA is less effective at knowledge injection because the low-rank constraint limits how much new information you can encode.
If I want the model to learn my company's entire product catalog, LoRA might not be the right tool.
That's where retrieval augmented generation, REG, or full fine-tuning comes in. LoRA is for behavior, style, format, voice, not for memorizing a knowledge base.
Versus just a longer system prompt.
System prompts compete for context window. If your style guidance is 2,000 tokens, that's 2,000 tokens you can't use for the actual task. Allura encodes the same behavioral guidance into the weights and costs zero context tokens at inference. But system prompts have the advantage of being editable on the fly. You can AAB test a prompt in minutes. Allura requires retraining. So the trade-off is context efficiency versus iteration speed.
Let's talk about the data requirement. How many examples do you realistically need to train a useful text, Laura?
This is where it gets surprisingly accessible. For a focused style or format task, you can get meaningful results with as few as 50 to 100 high-quality examples. I've seen compelling LoRAs trained on 200 examples. The key is quality and consistency. Every example needs to embody exactly the behavior you want. If your dataset is noisy or inconsistent, the LoRA will learn the noise.
Garbage in, garbage out survives the transition to modern AI.
It's the most durable principle in the field. Now, for more complex behaviors, nuanced voice adaptation, multi-domain format adherence, you might want 500 to a few thousand examples. But we're not talking about the massive datasets needed for pre-training. This is a few hours of curation.
The hardware requirement?
A single consumer GPU. For a 7 billion parameter model with a rank 16 LoRA, you can train on a card with 8 gigabytes of VRAM. A 24-gigabyte card like an RTX 4290 is comfortable for models up to about 13 billion parameters with LoRA. People are doing this on gaming laptops.
Which is the point about accessibility? This isn't frontier lab territory.
It really isn't. The tools are mature. Hugging Face's PEFT library, the Unsloth library for optimized training, Axolotl for config-driven fine-tuning, these are production-grade open-source projects. You can install them with pip, follow a tutorial, and have a trained LoRA in an afternoon. The barrier is knowledge, not cost.
That's the awareness gap the prompt is pointing at.
Most people who use LLMs, even technically sophisticated people, don't know this exists. They think model customization means prompt engineering or, at the extreme, training a model from scratch. The middle ground, cheap, fast, accessible behavioral adaptation, is invisible.
Let's talk failure modes. What goes wrong?
Three big ones. If your training data set is too small or too narrow, the LoRA learns to reproduce the examples exactly rather than generalizing the style. You get a model that can perfectly recreate your training outputs but falls apart on anything slightly different. The adapter becomes brittle. It works great on the exact kind of input it was trained on and nowhere else.
The model equivalent of memorizing the test.
And it's insidious because your eval metrics might look great if you're testing on held out examples from the same narrow distribution. The failure only shows up in production, when real users ask things slightly outside the training domain.
Second failure mode?
Catastrophic forgetting, though with LoRA it's less severe than with full fine-tuning because the base weights are frozen. What happens is the adapter can overpower the base model's general capabilities. You train a LoRA to make the model concise, and suddenly it's terse to the point of being unhelpful. You train for JSON output, and it loses the ability to explain its reasoning in natural language. The adapter's influence bleeds into behaviors you didn't intend to change.
You're trading generality for specificity.
You have to be careful about how much you trade. The alpha parameter I mentioned earlier, that's your main lever for controlling adapter strength. Lower alpha means the LoRA contributes less to the final output, preserving more of the base behavior. Finding the right balance is empirical.
Third failure mode.
Data contamination in the other direction. If your training data accidentally includes patterns you don't want, hedging language, particular phrases, formatting quirks, the LoRA will learn those too, and they can be hard to diagnose. I saw a case where someone trained a LoRA on technical documentation that happened to include "please note that" in most examples. The resulting model began every response with "please note that" regardless of the prompt.
The verbal tick is ghost in the dataset.
It's hard to debug. You can inspect the LoRA weights and see, there's the "please note that" neuron. You have to do behavioral testing, which is slow and noisy.
How do you evaluate a LoRA? How do you know if it's good?
This is under discussed. Most people do vibe checks, they chat with the model and see if it feels right. That's fine for personal projects, but for anything that goes into production, you need something more systematic. I'd recommend a held-out test set of prompts that covers the range of behaviors you care about, with clear criteria for what good output looks like. Run both the base model and the LoRA augmented model on the same prompts and compare. Ideally, have someone blind to which model produced which output do the rating.
We're back to comparative evaluation. No magic metric.
No magic metric. And that's actually one of the things that keeps LoRA adoption lower than it could be. Prompt engineering has an immediate feedback loop. You change a sentence, you see what happens. LoRA training has a delay, and the evaluation is messier. The iteration cycle is longer. That friction deters people.
Even though the tool itself is cheap, the evaluation is expensive.
In time and attention, yes. Which is why the people who use LoRAs most effectively tend to have a clear, narrow use case with well-defined success criteria. The model must output valid JSON with these exact keys. That's easy to evaluate automatically. The model should sound warm but professional. That's harder.
Let me ask a question that I think a lot of listeners would have. If I train a LoRA on my writing style, and then the base model gets updated, the lab releases a new version, does my LoRA still work?
If the architecture changes, different layer names, different dimensions, then no, the adapter won't load. You'd need to retrain. But if it's the same architecture with updated weights, say a new fine tune of the same base model, the LoRA will often transfer reasonably well, because the low-rank structure captures something about the behavioral delta that's somewhat invariant to the exact base weights. Not perfectly, you'll usually see some degradation, but often well enough to be useful while you train a new version.
It's not entirely throwaway when the base model updates.
And some people intentionally train LoRAs on multiple base model versions to make them more robust. There's a whole sub-practice here.
Let's zoom out. Why did this technique emerge from Microsoft in 2021? What problem were they solving?
The problem of deploying fine-tuned large models at scale. If you're a cloud provider and every customer wants a customized GPT-3, you can't store and serve a separate 175 billion parameter checkpoint for each one. The storage and memory costs would be absurd. LoRA lets you store one copy of the base model and thousands of tiny adapters. The paper explicitly frames this as a deployment efficiency problem. The fact that it also makes fine-tuning accessible to individuals on consumer hardware was a happy side effect.
Which ended up being the more transformative impact.
The paper's authors probably weren't thinking about a hobbyist training Alora on their personal chat logs on a gaming laptop, but that's where we are.
The unintended consequence of making deployment efficient was making customization democratic.
That's the thing I want people to take away from this. You don't need a cluster, you don't need a team, you don't need a budget. If you can curate 100 good examples, you can shape a language model's behavior. That's a superpower that most people don't know they have.
If someone's listening and thinking, I want to try this, what's the actual workflow? Walk me through the steps.
Step 1. Define exactly what behavior you want, not better writing. Outputs that use short paragraphs, active voice, no adverbs, and a wry tone. Step 2. Curate a data set of examples that embody that behavior. If you're training on input-output pairs, each example is a prompt and the ideal response. 50 to a few hundred of these. Step 3. Pick a base model. For most people, a 7 billion to 13 billion parameter open model is the sweet spot. Llama, Mistral, Qwen, something in that range. Step 4. Configure your training. Pick your rank. Start with 16. Your alpha. Your learning rate. The Unsloth or Axolotl defaults are sensible. Step 5. Train. On a decent GPU, a few hundred examples with a 7 billion parameter model might take 15 to 40 minutes. Step 6. Evaluate. Run your test prompts. Compare to the base model. Look for the failure modes we discussed.
The whole thing can happen in an afternoon.
The first time might take a day because you're learning the tools. By the third time, it's an afternoon project.
You mentioned earlier that Alora is less effective at injecting new knowledge. Can you expand on that?
The low-rank constraint is the bottleneck. New factual knowledge, a company's product specs, the details of a recent event, a niche domain's entire ontology requires the model to encode information it didn't have during pre-training. That information is high-dimensional. Cramming it through a rank 8 or rank 16 bottleneck loses a lot. The Alora can't memorize a knowledge base. It can only learn stylistic and behavioral patterns that leverage knowledge the base model already has. If you need the model to know things it doesn't already know, you want RAG. Put the knowledge in a vector database and retrieve it at inference. Or you want full fine-tuning, which updates all parameters and can encode more new information.
Alora is behavioral. RAG is factual. Full fine-tune is both, but expensive.
That's a useful simplification. In practice, there's overlap. Alora can learn some factual patterns, and RAG can influence style through the retrieved context. But as a mental model, it holds up.
One more thing I want to touch on. The prompt mentions catastrophic forgetting. We talked about the adapter overpowering base behaviors, but isn't there also a risk in the other direction? The base model's existing safety training getting partially overwritten?
Yes, and it's a real concern. The base models from major labs have undergone extensive safety fine-tuning, RLHF, Constitutional AI, red teaming. When you train Alora on top, you're adding a behavioral nudge that can, in some cases, partially override those safety measures. It's not that the model becomes dangerous, the base weights are still there, but the adapter can shift the model's behavioral distribution in ways that reduce the effectiveness of the safety training. This is one reason the labs are cautious about offering fine-tuning APIs with full adapter access. They often restrict what you can fine-tune and monitor outputs.
The same mechanism that lets you override unwanted cheerfulness can also override wanted caution.
It's a dual-use capability, like most powerful tools. The open-source community tends to view this as a feature. You should be able to control the model's behavior. The labs view it as a risk to be managed. Both perspectives have merit.
Let's talk about something the prompt didn't ask, but that I'm curious about. What's the state of the art here? Where is Alora going?
A few directions. One is dynamic rank allocation. Instead of picking a fixed rank, the training process learns which layers need more adaptation capacity and allocates rank accordingly. Another is quantized Alora, qLora, which quantizes the base model to 4 bits and trains the Alora on top, making the whole thing run on even smaller hardware. The qLora paper from 2023 showed you can fine-tune a 65 billion parameter model on a single 48 GB GPU. That was previously unthinkable.
The hardware floor keeps dropping.
and there's work on multi-adapter composition, loading multiple LoRAs simultaneously and having them cooperate. Imagine one LoRa for style, one for domain vocabulary, one for output format, all active at once. The math gets tricky. The adapters can interfere with each other, but early results are promising.
The modular synthesizer keeps getting more modular.
That's the trajectory. We're moving toward a world where you don't download a model. You download a base model and compose it with a stack of adapters that collectively define its behavior. The base model provides the general intelligence. The LoRAs provide the specificity.
Which makes the awareness gap even more important to close. If this is where the technology is heading, knowing it exists isn't optional.
And I'll add one more thing. There's a psychological barrier here. People hear fine-tuning and think it's a heavy industrial process, something Google and OpenAI do in data centers. The term itself is intimidating. Low-rank adaptation sounds like linear algebra homework. But the actual experience of training a LoRa is, you write a config file, you run a script, you wait half an hour, and you have a customized model. It's shockingly mundane. The magic is in the math, not in the difficulty.
The gap between perceived complexity and actual complexity is enormous.
It's one of the biggest gaps in the entire AI practitioner space. People who would benefit enormously from LoRAs don't try them because they assume it's beyond their technical reach. And the people who do try them often have a moment of, wait, that's it?
Like adopting a feral cat.
I'm not sure that's the analogy, but I'll allow it.
To pull it together, LoRA started in language models, not images. It works by freezing the base model and training tiny rank decomposition matrices injected into the attention layers. It's cheap, fast, and runs on consumer hardware. It's excellent for voice, style, format, and behavioral consistency, and weaker for knowledge injection. The main failure modes are overfitting, behavioral bleed, and data contamination. And the biggest barrier isn't cost or hardware. It's that most people don't know it exists.
That's the episode.
One thing I want to name before we wrap. There's something almost subversive about LoRA that I think explains both its appeal and its obscurity. The large AI labs sell access to models, APIs, endpoints, tokens. They control the behavior. LoRA says you can have the model behave however you want. Not by asking nicely in a prompt, but by actually changing how it works. That's a power shift. And power shifts make institutions uncomfortable.
That's a fair point. The open weight model ecosystem, Lama, Mistral, Qwen, combined with LoRA, means that behavioral control is no longer exclusively in the hands of the model provider. You can take Lama, train a LoRA, and have a model with a personality the original creators never intended and might not approve of. That's either liberating or concerning, depending on your perspective.
For our listeners, it's just useful. That's the thing. You don't need a grand philosophical stance. You just need to know you can make the model stop using the word delve in every other paragraph.
Or start using it, if that's your thing. I don't judge. And now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
In the 1860s, geologists on the island of Grande Comore discovered that the volcanic gas vents on Mount Karthala emit a mixture so sulfur-rich that the escaping plumes produce a continuous low-frequency hum, around 27 hertz audible from several miles away, and described by one visiting naturalist as the Earth's own bassoon.
The Earth's own bassoon. In the end, I think the thing that sticks with me is how much capability is hiding in plain sight. LoRA has been around for 5 years. It's mature, it's documented, it's free. And most people who use AI every day have never heard of it. What else is out there, fully baked and waiting to be discovered by the people who need it? That's the open question. And it's a good one to sit with.
This has been my weird prompt. Thanks to our producer, Hilbert Flumingtop. You can find every episode at myweirdprompts.com. If you got something out of this one, leave us a review. It helps. We'll be back next week.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth's slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long ear host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.